This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 5th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 276. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature, art heals and art helps. Hear from Vancouver Boat Show guest Inna Nagaitseva, a watercolor artist from Ukraine who is staying in Calgary because of the war. And the latest poll from Research Co.'s Mario Canseco. Some surprising thoughts from respondents on liquefied natural gas in British Columbia. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Returning to the podcast is Research Co-President Mario Canseco. His latest survey finds the rising cost of household energy is top of mind. 50% of the respondents to the poll say it's getting too expensive. 800 British Columbia adults weighed in online from January 9th to 11th. A majority support expanding liquefied natural gas plants and pipelines.
What does that say about British Columbians nowadays? There's been a big debate over natural gas from environmentalists who say it's harmful to the environment. It's just another fossil fuel. But the people who are proponents of natural gas say it is cleaner burning, lower cost, and we've got a lot of it here in British Columbia.
Well, it's almost as if the needle didn't move. If we go back to the time when the BC Liberals were in power and they were discussing LNG, we continue to see a high level of support for the industry, particularly in southern BC and the Fraser Valley. These are areas that traditionally vote for the BC Liberals. And it drops dramatically when we go to the island where the BC Liberals don't do well, only 41% who believe that this is something that should be entertained. So it's a bit of a delicate balance issue for the NDP government. You know, they don't want to be seen as essentially coasting on the things that the BC Liberals were doing. They still need to take care of their environmental wing. But at this moment, it's not as if LNG is a very contentious issue. We have a majority of residents who believe that we should continue to expand. And the level of animosity is roughly 30%, and it's not particularly strong. So it's not a situation that is going to make people look the other way. So it's one of those files where the NDP has to thread carefully. You know, maybe don't expand as much. Don't try to say that you're essentially following what the BC Liberals wanted to do. But there is definitely interest outside of their core base on expanding this industry.
Geopolitics and the Ukraine war have impacted the cost of energy. Here in BC, the BC Liberal government maybe oversold LNG while it was in power. You can't forget Pamela Martin's famous trillion-dollar tweet. But what about nuclear energy? They've got it in Washington State, and they've got it in Eastern Canada.
Well, I think it was certainly surprising to see this as a split. I was expecting maybe the level of opposition towards nuclear power to be higher than it is. One of the reasons for this is the inflationary concerns. You know, we have people who are very worried about the fact that their electricity bill is going to go up significantly. It's higher than the level of concern that we see for climate change. So in that sense, people are looking at this more from the standpoint of their own wallets, and they're looking at nuclear power under specific circumstances as something that they would be happy to entertain. The numbers would be very different on this issue 10, 20 years ago. There's been a lot of discussions about whether this should be included, the fact that we have it in Washington State. And what's really fascinating to me looking at the numbers is we don't see a significant variation by party. BC Greens are just as likely to think of nuclear power as an option as BC Liberals or BC NDP voters. So what this requires in a way is a champion politically, somebody who wants to talk about this and certainly discuss some of the benefits of trying to bring those reactors into BC, because it's not a non-starter. I mean, you look at the numbers, it's not as if the level of animosity towards nuclear power is so high that nobody would touch this, but there are certain votes to be gained, and certainly BC residents seem to be welcoming of something like this if it benefits them directly.
Talk about that balance there. People are worried about their energy use, but they're also worried about how it's going to affect the environment. Where are people going there?
I think part of what we see is the stories coming out of the United States, the situation that they've had over the past few years, particularly in California, as far as moments when you're going to have rolling blackouts, when you're going to be asked to not use electricity at all. There's a concern that something like that could happen here. It's not as high as what we see for the actual cost of energy generation, which is the one thing that is definitely troubling people. But it's really remarkable, because when we used to ask this question in the early years of this century, we got more people who were concerned about the environmental aspects of energy generation and energy consumption than their actual cost. And this really speaks about the situation that we're facing as far as inflation is concerned, when the number one issue is, I don't want to pay too much for my energy. It used to be significantly lower down the list because we didn't have as many pressures from a budgetary standpoint. And now it's number one concern. People think of energy and they think, how expensive is this going to be? Whereas 15 years ago, they probably would have said, how is this going to affect climate change? So our pockets are definitely winning the battle at this point when it comes to the way we feel about energy.
The federal and BC governments are aggressively pushing electric cars and trucks. They want to phase out gasoline by 2035. 70% of respondents to Mario Canseco's poll like the idea, but 38% say it is not achievable.
But people are looking at this with some skepticism.
Well, this one was an eye-opener for me, because you do have a lot of residents who believe that this is a laudable cause. You know, we should definitely look into phasing out fossil fuels when it comes to actual transportation. But there's still a lot of skepticism from residents. We have a larger component of that 70%, 38%, who say, I just don't think this is achievable. You know, it's nice to look into the calendar and think that by 2035, this is something that is going to be done. We've seen in research that we've conducted previously, a lot of concerns for motorists as far as running out of juice and not finding a place where they can charge their vehicle. Those are things that are certainly making those decisions more complicated, even when we have all of those rebates in place. But there's also the questions about whether this is happening too quickly. We know that the BC government originally said 2040 for this, and then the federal government said, well, we want to do this federally, so you'd better have this ready 5 years earlier. So now we're looking at a different date when this is going to be affecting British Columbians, and it's just 12 years down the road. So there's a lot of concern about whether this is happening too quickly and what is going to happen with people who depend on the fossil fuel industry. So part of it is, how much is this going to cost? Is this going to be a situation where, as we get closer to the moment when I can't use my car anymore, are the cars that are electric going to be sufficiently cheap so that I can get one? So there's a lot of budgetary constraints, of course, but more than anything, is this happening too quickly? Should we have set a specific goal in mind that wasn't as close as 2040?
And finally, before I let you go, calling an audible about Super Bowl, Eagles or Chiefs, who do you think will win the big game down in Arizona?
I like the Chiefs by 4 points. That's the way I'm calling it.
That was Mario Canseco of Research Co. joining me on the Breaker.News podcast. Go to researchco.ca. The Vancouver International Boat Show returned to BC Place Stadium from February 1st to 5th. The Level 2 exhibition featured Inna Nigaitseva, a watercolor artist from Ukraine. The first anniversary of Putin's illegal war on Ukraine is coming February 24th. Nigaitseva brought her art to Vancouver to raise money for her family and for her countrymen who are fighting against Putin.
My name is Inna Nigaitseva. I'm a watercolor artist from Ukraine.
And you're here at BC Place Stadium at the boat show. Tell me how you got here.
Yes, I was invited by Boat and BC Association to present my art and to help to raise some funds for Ukrainian people. I am originally from Kyiv, but in May I was moved into Canada, to Calgary. Now I live in Calgary.
How did it affect you personally?
Well, for real, it's a horrible year for me, horrible year for all of my family, because it's very, very difficult to live in this situation and to speak with the family who are unfortunately still in Ukraine. But we're trying to live and trying to help how we can help. Sorry, my English not very perfect.
You've been practicing art for many years. What does art mean to you at this very challenging time for you and those who have your art or receive your art?
Well, I'm not a lot of years of this paint. I started only 6 years ago, and I was interested in watercolor because it's a hard material, and I'm trying to learn it more and more and more. And while I was learning, I trying to paint some interesting things for me, like Norse landscapes, sailing, whales. I don't know why, but I love these themes very much. And now I have what I have today. Yes, I'm trying to paint my dreams. Sometimes it's my feelings on paper with watercolor.
That Vancouver sister city, first sister city was Odessa. Have you spent much time in Odessa?
No.
Or on the coast? Or
no. I'm in Vancouver. This is my first time in Vancouver, and I'm here only 3 days. But I was a little bit to learn this city, wonderful city. Mm-hmm. Especially, I love the boats and the lighthouse.
Mm-hmm. How do you pick up the scenes of the water that you paint about?
Well, for real, I have a lot of friends who are traveler and photographer, and mostly they visited countries what I like Iceland, like North America, like a lot of different Scandinavian places. So I just choose the photos and paint by the photos, but with making some change, because I don't like to make a 100% copy. So I all the time changing, and I have feelings from their photos, something like this.
You're here for 3 days, but will you have time to get out of the stadium and go down just to False Creek, just nearby, and look at some of the sailboats and other boats that are there, or go to anywhere else along the waterfront of Vancouver, maybe get some photos, or maybe do a painting while you're here? You've got a lot of opportunities outside.
Yeah, I'm understanding this, but for now, for me now, Vancouver is a little expensive, so maybe in future I will have more time to visit here and maybe to have some plein air outside with the boats, with the water, with I don't know, mountains too, a lot of things, yeah, what I can paint here.
I wonder if you can show me a bit of a tour of what you have here, what you're displaying, what people can see on display or even buy.
Sure. Boards are mostly from my friends who sent me, and I have some postcards with my old art, so you can see that I love to paint north, I like to paint boats, sometimes underwater, and whales. This is my favorite things, and I really like to paint them. And I have a couple of paintings for sale, and you can come and make a commission paintings about with board, about something else, what you would like to paint. I paint landscapes, I paint whales, I paint underwater. Sometimes I paint portraits, but not a lot of.
What you're also doing is raising money to help out with Ukraine.
Some money I will send to help my family who continue to live in Kyiv in Ukraine. Some funds I will send to my friends who are soldiers and they are on hotspots. Sometimes they need to buy some stuff, food and a lot of different things. And I have a lot of different families who also need help because they lost their husbands or their fathers on the war, so I will send them money too. Yes.
What kind of challenges are your family facing right now in Kyiv? We hear in news reports about power plants being shut off or by the Russians, that that some people are living without power, without heat.
My family live without electricity every day. a couple of hours every day with electricity. But they have food with this everything okay, so we just hope for that it will be end shortly, very shortly, because we're very tired.
That was Inna Nagayatseva, watercolor artist based in Calgary and originally from Kyiv, Ukraine. Find her on Instagram. Search Inna_Nagayatseva_art. That's spelled Inna_Nagayatseva_art. Or look for the link on thebreaker.news. News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Taipei MRT bomb threat comes with demand Taiwan reject Swiss delegation. Similar threats were made last week with the latest specifying Taiyuan Airport MRT Station A1. The individual or group behind the threat claimed that barrels of fuel would be ignited in an attack on passengers. Police have stepped up patrols. The message called for the central government to refuse entry to the Swiss delegation, which is visiting for 6 days, and it threatened to carry out an attack while the delegation is in Taiwan. Taipei MRT received threats on January 27th and 28th. The individual, who is not in Taiwan, was quickly identified by the authorities as a young Chinese citizen who studied in Taiwan. In Kyoto news, Japan government considering mask-free school graduation ceremonies. The government is already planning to reclassify the novel coronavirus to the same medical category as common infectious diseases, such as seasonal influenza, from May 8th. Lawmakers have called for the easing of rules around mask wearing at schools, taking into consideration that students graduating from junior and senior high schools have spent their 3 years under COVID-19 restrictions. The government believes that the risk of infection is low, since such ceremonies involve little conversation among students, meaning wearing one will be considered unnecessary. In Hong Kong Free Press, Joshua Wong, Cardinal Zen, among Hong Kong activists nominated for Nobel Peace Prize by U.S. politicians. The nomination, the U.S. politicians said, sought to, quote, honor all those in Hong Kong whose bravery and determination in the face of repression has inspired the world. Also among the nominees are pro-democracy media mogul Jimmy Lai, Tiananmen visual organizer Chow Hang Tung, former journalist Gwyneth Ho, and former lawmaker Lee Chuk Yan. The six were nominated by Republican politicians Marco Rubio and Christopher Smith, and Democrats James McGovern and Jeff Markley. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Multnomah County says it plans to pay landlords a year's rent to rapidly house people living in tents in and near downtown Portland. The county will spend $14 million on it over the coming 12 months. The initial focus will be a four-month drive to move 300 people living primarily in tents in and near downtown into apartments. The county would guarantee private landlords it will pay them a year's worth of rent, plus give them other protections such as mediation services if tenant-landlord issues arise. More than 5,000 people are experiencing homelessness in the county. Of those, more than 3,000 were unsheltered, living in tents and sleeping bags or in vehicles. In King 5, former King County Drainage District Commissioner sentenced in scheme to steal taxpayer money. Ellen Thomas was found guilty on 10 of 15 charges, including conspiracy and wire and mail fraud. Thomas, who previously denied that he used more than $450,000 in tax money collected by the public district to pay expenses for his Enumclaw dairy farm, was found guilty of conspiracy, four counts each of wire and mail fraud and one count of aggravated identity theft. Thomas was responsible for maintaining nearly 20 miles of open trenches that provide drainage to the farmland outside the city. In the Times Colonist, Van Isle Violet predicts 6 more weeks of winter. Groggy Vancouver Island marmot makes a twitching motion when put on the scales for weighing in dim lighting on Groundhog Day. Violet lives at the Marmot Recovery Foundation's facility on Mount Washington near Courtney. Last year, she correctly predicted additional weeks of cold weather. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to priests, rabbis, imams, leaders of churches, chapels, synagogues, and temples in British Columbia, whatever the religion. It's World Interfaith Harmony Week until February 7th. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 5th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 5th of February in 1971, Apollo 14 astronauts Alan Shepard, Stuart Roosa, and Edgar Mitchell landed on the moon? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.